But anyway, I think we probably have enough people watching now across all the networks, but mostly on YouTube, that we can roll the intro and officially get going. All right, here we go. So, hey everyone, officially happy Friday, wherever you are in the world. I'm joined by the one and only Cryptosi. How's it going?
Yeah, great. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. This is Dash Podcast, I believe, number 208. Done 208 of these over the years. It used to be a daily or a weekly one. And then after that was on the Dash News channel in 2019. At the end of 2019, I migrated to this channel. And then since then, did every other week and then every month now, just to keep it. Because otherwise, it was just like scrambling. Hey, get someone on to talk. And like, yeah. I think it's... It, rather than being like more news focused, like it helps to have like a subject kind of all that stuff. Anyway, so if you're in my Discord and have one of my NFTs, you can obviously leave me a super chat at any time. Otherwise, you can use the regular chats. There is a YouTube super chat thing, the fiat chat, which doesn't end up as fiat on my end, so don't worry about that. So for all that and the regular live chat, I reserve the right to just ignore people who don't pay. Which is, you know, that's what you do. So, as Hilawi is saying, so Sven is speaking at 5:15 U.S. Eastern, so it'd be a good potential stop. Yeah, we'll probably not be fully wrapped up by then, but that's fine. You can just pick up here where you left off, or you can keep watching this and then just start whatever he's doing. But anyway, isn't it great that there's like so much stuff going on that, you know, there's actual competition for things?
It just seems like there's a boom in productivity at the minute. Everybody's talking, loads of things are happening. It's an exciting time.
Yeah, I would say that as far as like, obviously we had the big 2017 Dash blow off, and then over time, you know, every year that there's been no Evo and then price decline and stuff, you know, just few more and more people, like the usage doesn't seem to have actually declined if you look at numbers, like transactions and stuff. But like as far as people in and around the community getting involved, it just seems to have kind of gone away. And then there was a bump after Ryan Taylor left the Dash Core group. And then there was a similar sort of bump right around now, which I call like the, what was it, the capitulation bump. It's like right at the market bottom. People like waking up, and then you had the reallocation proposal, which went through. And then that energized a lot of extra people. And then the thoughts of like, Evo's almost out. Oh. Like actually almost out over here, and then let's do a retreat, and then let's just everyone's coming, kind of coming alive, and like it's a good time for a lot of things. So, but let's just go over like, where did you come from? Where did you go? Cotton Eye Joe? No, where did you, what's your background in crypto, and you know, how did you learn about Dash and stuff?
Okay. Crypto. I got into crypto in late 2012.
It's a good time.
And my background is in computer science, internet applications, user interfaces and things like that. So once I learned about Bitcoin, sat down, I didn't read the white paper, I'm not going to tell that lie, but I once I understood what it was and the potential for it, my mind was obviously blown. I kind of saw it initially as like a Napster for money, or like maybe like a BitTorrent for money, and I realized how powerful that would be. And from there I was like, okay, I've got to go all in on this new technology. Found out about Dash, I think before it was even called Dash. I just randomly saw a tutorial on YouTube of some guy showing how to set up masternodes. I was like, oh, that sounds cool. Sounds like a node, but even better. Let's look into this. And had a look at it. And then obviously Amanda B. Johnson was doing the Daily Decrypt at the time. And she would often speak about Dash, which kind of cemented it in my mind. Before you know it, I was in the Slack, I guess it was, at the time. Seeing what was going on, and I was very much on the sidelines. When I was in Dash originally. I can't remember what year it was. It was a while ago, though. And then obviously they had the change when the baby giraffe came in and they said, okay, we're going to drop privacy. And it wasn't really voted on. It was kind of just a decision that the higher ups made. And then a bunch of people left and went off and started PivX. And I was one of those people, not so much because of the privacy, but mostly because of how the decision was made. I just kind of felt like we've got this masternode system, but we've not even bothered to use it. Felt like the power had corrupted.
Yeah. So the original people who scooted over to PivX, I came around in the community somewhere around the same time. It was like 2016, mid-2016. Yeah. And I remember there was some community proposal that I was named under, but it didn't get funded. And that proposal losing ended up being the catalyst for the big rage quit, as I would call it. You know, and it was, I can't remember, it was like the Dash guy, remember that guy? And then,
yes,
decentralized the as it goes by now.
The Dash guy become the PivX guy?
Yes.
I believe that's what he done, didn't he?
Became, it. Now he's decentralized, yeah. Except without the final E before the D, decentralized.
Oh, is that who it was? Yes, yeah. I know him. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So that's, it was him. It was I can't even remember all the different names, but it was like a collection of these people who were very boisterous, let's just say. And they were talking about trying to fork the coin and all this kind of stuff. And then they left. And so I don't really know too much about the PivX origins. But I do remember that a lot of those same faces then popped up in PivX right when there was like a big, you know, a big like push. And then there's all this attention and there's friction between the communities. And then that just sort of died off. When a lot of those same people then moved over to Smart Cash, and then and Smart Cash did its whole thing, and then like that's all well in the past at this point. But
there were some other rage quits, as you call them, within PivX. It seems like these crypto communities, we have this problem when there is a serious discussion to be had and we can't get our point across, that we take up our toys and leave. I wouldn't say it's a bad thing necessarily. I think often, especially in the case of PivX, I think it was important that PivX was created, both because it was proof of stake and mostly because it stuck to privacy, something which you touched on in your talk that you gave just now, which I guess people won't see, maybe put a link in the description or whatever, but when we spoke about people are willing to pay for privacy, people are willing to use a coin for privacy, and I felt like, and I still feel like, it's PivX has a reason to exist, and I think there's nothing wrong with a community forking if what they're forking for has a reason to exist. But the real thing that I found disappointing, and which is one of the reasons why I tried to stay as much between the two camps as I could, was that there's no real reason for a person to have to choose one or the other. And that's kind of like the tribalism that I think kind of haunts crypto even like to this day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously we're also in a discovery phase. And like, for example, you have Dash and PivX, and then you had Smart Cash, which didn't do the privacy, or it got rid of the privacy pretty early on, but it was a lot of the same market share competition. And then you had Zencash, or Horizon as it's known now, very different today, but it was meant as a Dashify Zcash, which sounds kind of like PivX, right? And so like, you have all these coins doing a very much kind of the same thing. And you have, of course, Fira, which has masternodes, but is also very privacy focused. And like, you can kind of find a lot of, like, honestly, in 10 years, most of those projects won't be there. There'll be a few of them, right? It'll coalesce into a smaller number of options. But I do think it was interesting because I was sort of on the outs. I was new enough to the community where the whole privacy thing didn't, like, here's the thing about, like, and I mean, I don't want to speak ill of the dead because Ryan Taylor's not dead, but that's not the point. I don't speak ill, but from my memory, there was never an explicit pivot away from privacy. It was never a decision, either from the network standpoint or from even DashCore Group's standpoint. It was never explicitly done. It was just like a covert shift, a downplaying over time, just like a de-emphasis. And that's kind of one of the hallmarks of the Taylor era, as it were, where it just like what's really going on was really going on, and it wasn't explicit. And so it's kind of like a good way of, in my view, kind of subverting the DAO, where, you know, if you put it to a vote, the vote's going to tell you one thing. But if you just say, but if you just say other things, and just if you say we're doing this, someone can put it to a vote, and then you lose. But like, if you just, you know, kind of squish around, and if I were that's I guess straw manning the fellow. If I were to steel man him, I could also just say it was a strategy of not getting away from privacy, but of keeping a low enough profile while building up other things that were viewed to be more valuable that ultimately probably didn't work out, you know? But that would be the steel man, you know, point of view
it's a tough one, right? So I've always said this. I don't know if the decision to stop privacy being at the forefront was a bad decision or not. So I guess people are going to have their own views on it. Dash didn't fail because it decided not to keep privacy at the front. The problem really was that in these crypto groups, especially at that time, a lot of these people were laser focused on the mission. This was prior to the big 2017 pump where a lot of people got rich and lazy. So a lot of people were laser focused, and that small decision to put the cash aspect of Dash first was very loud to the people who were there and wanted privacy to be first. So when we started PivX, the first thing that we done was that we installed a manifesto, which the first line of it said, privacy is not negotiable. So regardless of what the exchanges say, regardless of what anything else that happens that can kind of subdue us or co-opt us into doing something else, we're going to stay on mission. And I think not only with privacy, but I think with a lot of other factors within crypto over the years, we've all become co-opted. You probably were in crypto early enough to remember when under collateralized loans were a big thing. So you could go and lend money to a guy in Venezuela to start up a chicken farm or whatever, and then he can earn a living from that. Those sorts of things basically don't even exist now. And those were the things that, I don't want to say the establishment, but those were the things that there were outside forces really trying to curb that sort of behavior, because I guess it was really giving people a level of freedom that maybe they shouldn't have had for whatever reason. And I feel like it's very important that we do follow the mission and don't get sidetracked by either getting rich or having a big market cap or any of these other accolades that in the grand scheme of things weren't the reasons why we joined in the first place. But that's I guess that's for the people who joined before 2017. After that, obviously now it's a different kettle of fish. People will message me now and say, you know, they just want to make more money, and that's the reason why they're in crypto. So
well, I mean, I guess that's what goes back when I was talking about the fee thing and all that, is a lot of people try to separate profit from like mission. And I guess to a certain extent there can be separations, but if privacy is worthwhile, for example, let's just pick on privacy. Privacy is worthwhile, people will pay for it. And if you give people privacy, you can make money off of it. And that's just as simple as it is, right? And you don't, and there is a lot of, you do have to make a trade-off between fast, easy gains and, you know, long-term gains, or maybe absolute gains. And then, but you can still make a living off of doing the right thing. And if you're not making a living doing the right thing, there's some things are missing in the recipe. Like there's some ways you haven't figured out how to make it right. And like the thing about crypto is this whole ICO boom era, like the 2017 and 2021 bull market era cryptos, that whole thing, the whole .com bubble, whatever you want to call it, .eth bubble, I don't know. But that whole thing is not, that has no value, right? It's, people are hoping it has some value. The value, that the principles behind crypto, these like, you know, supposedly pure principles are literally the monetization value proposition of,
yeah,
like people will pay money for decentralized censorship resistant money. People will pay money to do all the cool stuff you can do with DeFi. They will pay money for NFTs and subverting that whole, you know, the stranglehold that like Hollywood and copyright law and all that has over creators, products and stuff. That is a business. That is the whole point of crypto, is this stuff. And if you focus on the stuff that makes money, you're not going to make any money, ironically.
Yeah. 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 And that's been the theme. So yeah, I fully agree. I really agree.
Yeah. So, you went with, you know, spent a lot of time in PIVX. Where are you still as involved as you've ever been? Is there like a way to categorize that?
No. Okay. So, with PIVX, I got kicked out. So I was being my usual, quiet self and not ruffling feathers, but basically, long story short, what happened is I'd upset the at the time core team. Mm-hmm. Because I guess I'd gone off to make a light wallet, and during the process of making a light wallet, there were some breaking changes that were going to be done to the core blockchain that they just didn't tell me about, broke the light wallet, and then they were complaining and saying, oh, well, no one's using the light wallet anyway, da da da. Anyway, long story short, we had an argument, and it was kind of like a case of, well, these guys are the devs, and they are important, and you're just Cryptosi, you're not as important, so you know, you can't speak to them that way. I was kind of okay with it, because it felt like the right time to move on. I'm not naturally not as tribal as most people within crypto, so as soon as that happened, which was at the start of 2020, I kind of like, it feels like I lifted my head up and I looked around the rest of the crypto ecosystem, and I was like, wow, there's a lot of stuff happening here. There's lots of things being built. There's loads of new technologies. I'd previously kind of scoffed at DeFi and been like, well, this is pointless. You're trading tokens. You're just playing with inflation all the time. It's nonsensical. I hadn't really looked into it deeply, hadn't looked into all of the other ways that DAOs could be built and all of the other technologies around them, especially in Ethereum and Cosmos ecosystem, all of those things. So all of that came together at a perfect time. So it worked out brilliantly for me. But then what I realized with that situation was that I really am doing an injustice to the rest of the crypto ecosystem with the experience I have and the knowledge that I have, by not interacting with these communities, by not going back to Dash and saying, okay, well, I understand this, and this, we could be doing this, and this better. And doing that with even small startup Ethereum DAOs and things like that. And that's how DAO Watch was born. And that's now become the mission. And the plan really is for me to try to cross-pollinate as much as I can. So just go into different communities, learn from them, help teach them, and have it so that we're not so siloed in our own little communities, which is effectively the way crypto has been up until now, and make it better in the future.
Yeah, the de-siloing thing is a real thing. I definitely had the same experience where I was a mostly pro Bitcoin person from like the 2012 era to the end of 2016. I always checked out other projects, but like I was trying to live off the stuff, and it was basically Bitcoin or nothing for a while. And then after that, I never was never a maxi, but I became very deep and focused on Dash for 2016, 2019, and then popped my head up 2020, moving on. Oh, what's going on? And still, have certain, things that I've stuck to. Now, when you say you got like kicked out of PIVX, so just on like what exactly does that constitute? Because from my experience, from my perspective, like I was part basically working full time in Dash from the very beginning of 2017 to the very end of 2019, full time for a proposal. And when I didn't have a funded proposal, that's when you could say I was like out. I've had sporadic ones here and there since 2020 to now. As of this last super block, I am no longer receiving any DAO funding in any way, shape, or form. I might pop back in here or there. We'll see. But the point is, like, I'm still here. I'm still doing my podcast. I'm still using Dash. I'm still running the Dash Twitter account, the Dash community Twitter account. I'm still doing all kinds of stuff, and they can't get rid of me if they wanted to. So, how what did kicking out entail?
You know what? I guess it's the same for me. It's more just a feeling because I still make stuff about PIVX. I still go into the thing. I still put forward proposals and have them passed. I still do stuff there. So it's more like a feeling. And the feeling was like, what you're doing is not what we want. And it might only be that that comes from one or two particularly loud individuals. So it's probably not, it's not an official thing. Do you know what I mean? I didn't get a you must resign letter and a P45, we would have it in England and like pack your bags and go pack your desk or whatever. So it was just I knew it was time to move on because I'd never been paid by PIVX. I'd always been the type of person, if I was involved in a project, I would invest in it and then I would help my own investment grow and I would live off of that. That was the whole plan. So I never actually been paid, but what we did have was we had roles. So in the Discord, we had certain people had admin roles, or maybe it equated kind of like to team member roles. So there was a group of people, which I guess you could call a council, and that group of people had an admin role within Discord. Now, when I had the situation where I had an argument with one of the devs and we both started swearing at each other, it was quite childish, to be fair. We both started swearing at each other. And obviously, I wasn't in the wrong because I generally never am. And after that, the guys, what happened is they had their own meeting, like behind closed doors, and they said, okay, should we keep Cryptosy in or should we get rid of him? Obviously, the developer was like, I'm not staying if he stays. And then so
Yeah, they
so
got.
the yeah the decision was, do we lose a developer or do we lose this guy who's not a developer? And
So it just
we still,
it ended up being a removal of Discord roles, or what else?
yeah, but it was more that I know that this guy doesn't want me to be there and this guy has got a lot of
Has
clout.
sway, yeah.
He's a developer, and we still live in Dash is going through it right now, where we live in a time where the developers, they have this incumbent power whereby, regardless of how much they mess up, how much they fail, how much they do wrong, they're still the devs, and we can't do what they do. So that even if they're not doing what they claim to be able to do, we can't, and they get a certain level of protection because of that. We think it's nonsense, but it is the way it is.
So, and this has kind of gone to my whole like DAO revaluation thing, because I've gone from like not knowing what a DAO was to being like DAO or GTFO, like this is all that matters, to now like I've half swung back the other way, not all the way, but like a little bit, to where I'm like, yes, I still think you need a DAO, but there's some nuance of extra. The thing is with like the Ryan Taylor situation, other than I think he was a masterful at showing the investors what they wanted to hear, quarter on quarter growth, all these slides, all this kind of stuff, and just, oh, we're working on this, and just like deadline was missed, but then found a way to like make it sound like, oh, no, it's going to be okay. Like, good at stringing people along. But in addition, Dash Core Group, or the Dash Core team, which became incorporated later, was the developers, as you mentioned. And so defunding the developers is just like a death knell for the project. And so what happened, I'm not saying it is, I'm saying that's the perception. It's the perception.
Yeah.
And so what happened in the end was, bygones be bygones. You can actually hear, if you scroll down on the live streams of this channel, you can find the last one where Ryan Taylor was on for like 2.5 hours. That was his, that was the next day he got fired. So if you want to know, if you want to dig into all the, which one time is going to have issue with me saying he was planning on resigning all along. He just resigned a little bit earlier because the Dash Core Group funding proposal was going to fail. And then as soon as he resigned, within the next hour, all the votes required to fund the core team came back. So
yeah,
there's some nuance, but whatever. I we get that. But so it was a difficult move, but it's like the developers are, even though it's under different leadership or much less leadership these days, in fact, they're still funded. It's still the same kind of guys. And so
yeah.
I think what I'd like to explore, because the hype I hear from the Bitcoin Cash community is they did fire their bad devs and now they have a decentralized development ecosystem because there's four main node implementation teams that are all working and they're all funded. From the marketing copy, that sounds like the ideal we should go for. I just have not dug deep enough to see, or there hasn't been enough time for me to see if that's like actually true or not. But
A similar thing has happened in PIVX. So the guy who I had an argument with a few months later, he left anyway because the price was sliding, therefore the budget was sliding, and therefore his wages were sliding. He could probably get paid a load more. He was a good developer. So he left anyway, and then there was no core team. So what PIVX had is they had very much the same as what Dash have got, where they had another group called PIVX Labs, which is their version of Incubator, for example. Now, the difference between these like third-party development groups and the incumbents is that these third-party groups, they have to be lean, they have to be on point, they have to report correctly, and they have to do what they say they're going to do. Otherwise, there's a whole army of trolls waiting to just jump on them and say, okay, these guys are useless, defund them. Now that those guys are in the driving seat, oddly enough, the development is running much smoother and we're getting much more out of them because they're just built to develop and build things. So, and I don't want to make enemies, obviously. I'm not saying that it will be a great thing for Dash to defund the core group, but from my experience and the way I understand it is if you did defund them, so what? It wouldn't matter because it would be a vote of people saying that these guys are not producing. Now, the fact that they've had 5 years, or evolution is 5 years late, which is at this point, and they haven't been defunded, is kind of like, well,
it's a hell of nuts if you think about it.
What was the point in having a DAO? Like, I can't think of an occupation in the world that you can have where you can deliver a project 5 years late and still get paid, and not only still get paid, but have a situation like we have now within Dash, whereby the entire block structure is being changed to accommodate the burn rate that these guys who have not, or are delivering something 5 years late, are about to deliver. The logic behind it is astounding, and it goes to show how sometimes DAOs can be even more inefficient than regular legacy companies. Because in a regular legacy company, there's no chance a group of people get to deliver something 5 years late. Unless we're talking about, I don't know, landing on the moon or something that was going to take 20 years in the first place. But
yeah, absolutely. Some nuance on the reallocation thing. It seems to be the person who put it in, Quantum Explorer Sam, who is the, I guess, the head developer. his motivation, you seem to be accurate as far as his motivations for putting it in, that like they're gonna have to lay off everyone if they don't get some more money at these price levels. Now the motivations for the votes on it could be all over the map. I mean, for me personally, that was not a primary motivation. I did agree to that proposal. I did support it, but under the thing is, first of all, I think especially with Evolution coming out, a lot more of the network resources are going to be a lot more activities can be centered around masternodes and Evo nodes and stuff. So it makes sense to have less mining and more of that. And also, as I mentioned in my talk that, you know, earlier today, Dash has done a great job of build it and they won't come. He's done a lot of like building things, spending so much money on like robust infrastructure to process payments for nobody. And so it makes little sense for a company to spend almost everything servicing no customers and only 10% of like a growth and maintenance budget. So for that, that makes sense. But I do agree that you can't get away from the immediacy of the proposal's logic being around Cordes will have to leave. That is definitely also true.
That whole proposal, I featured it in this, I featured it in this episode of Dow Watch, which released literally like an hour ago. And it's the whole proposal. It's so bad because it conflates so many things, because in that as well, there's a boost to the masternode owners, which should definitely be a separate question and should definitely be a question that you ask people who are not the masternode holders. And then on top of that, the way that it's going to be implemented will mean that the miners don't get a say in it at all. And it's very much like the move away from privacy, where, not to say that it's the wrong thing to do, because I think when you do listen to Sam, and he did explain it really well on the Incubator show, they are overpaying for security. And you literally just said it there. We're paying all this money out for security for the non-users. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So it should change, and the budget should grow. But it's just, when did the doubling allocation for the masternode owners, like when did that become such an urgent thing that it needed to be done now? And it just, little things like that just seem to be.
We had a super chat from Palawi real quick, where he just said, thanks Cryptosi, you gave me material for my Sunday presentation regarding DAO accountability, especially the part about DAOs sometimes being more inefficient and he said accountable, but he means unaccountable, than old boring and stable companies. But yeah, so that'll be interesting to watch on Sunday. But the point of, I think with the DAO is an interesting, the Dash DAO in particular is a very interesting pioneer in this case. And I'm not saying pioneer as a pure compliment, I'm saying as like also like the very rough first version of the DAO, because proof of work is a very fascinating, I think the story of proof of work will be over soon-ish, like maybe next 10, 20 years maybe. And there'll be a lot of assumptions there at the base of crypto have to be reimagined. And so, for example, hash rate was always votes back in the day. It just, hash rate ran the network. Miners decide, et cetera, et cetera. And then somewhere along the block size war, the narrative shifted where users decide. But what is a user? I guess if they run a node in Sybil Tech network or whatever, you know, it just became like this weird squishy, like what is in, but even then the miners played into that, where the miners did not decide. They abdicated their vote and they just let whatever happened happened. The only place I could actually see a hash rate vote was during the Bitcoin Cash BSV split, where there, it did appear to be an actual competition over the hash rate, but largely it seems like miners like are purely profit interested. And I'm not saying this is an insult, by the way, there's nothing wrong with that, but they're purely like janitors almost. Like they run these machines, they get their money, you know, and then they're kind of the last to, even in a pure proof of work chain like Monero, they decide we're going to brick all the ASICs and get rid of this. And they just like, who did they ask? Definitely not the people who mined all their, they just did it. There was like four different forks of Monero that came out of that. And it's clearly that the governance system, proof of work as it is designed, is not a governance system. Miners have no say, and there have been no meaningful attempts that I'm aware of to change this fact, to say like, well, let's find a way for them to explicitly vote and have their things heard. So unfortunately, even though Dash had a 50-50 split, the DAO gave all the power to the masternodes, and then there was a reallocation like a 60-40 instead. And now it's even more than that. And it's clearly that not only is mining being, I wouldn't say, I don't know if it's phased out, but it's phased down, but it's definitely the miners say the miners are, you know, temporary janitors slash opportunists on the network. They're not meant, they're not currently treated as equal partners. That is very clear. For if it's a bad idea, it is what it is. That's just what it is.
Yeah, it does. It feels like they're kind of like on a race to the bottom, aren't they? It's tough for the miners. But I've been more interested in proof of stake anyway, because the miners have always seemed like an expense as opposed to an ally. I guess it's possibly a little bit unfair on the miners, but it is what it is, I guess.
Reality.
Yeah, the security guard doesn't run the bank, does he? He just keeps it safe. That's his job. And if he gets sacked, he gets sacked.
Yeah, and so when the DAO vote comes down, it seems like the DAO vote's the only thing that's ever fully decided things. And I like, as far as like, what logo do we go with? Do we, you know, what do we do on-chain scaling? Do we fire that asshole in the polo shirt? Like, do we...
And this is the problem I have with this, and it's not underhandedness, but I'm quite aware, you're quite aware, Quantum Explorer's quite aware that there are plenty of stakeholders within the network. There are plenty of people who these decisions will affect, and there are plenty of people who have got good opinions that should or could be heard, or they should have a voice. Now, the issue that we have with the Dash masternode, exactly the same, the Dash system, DAO system, exactly the same as the PIVX system, is that it's young. So I like to think of DAOs like people, and Dash is 10 years old at the most. Now, it's a 10-year-old... Almost 10, right? So a 10-year-old can't fend for itself. I've got an almost 10-year-old in this house. Like, from time to time, I have to look after him. I have to do things for him. And that's kind of where we are with Dash and PIVX. Now, the problem that we've got is that we've got parents who aren't trying to encourage the DAO to be more self-sufficient, to be more independent. And what we really need is we need a way to poll everybody, and Quantum Explorer will know this. Like, I know it, you know it. The fact that and that's the nuance that you touched on, but you didn't actually go into, when Baby Giraffe got sacked and 100 votes all moved back in favor of the core team, it was more than likely one or two people that were like, okay, he's gone now, the coast is clear, let's vote them in again. And
there was a few dozen, but like, I do remember, because I was sort of involved with those discussions a little bit. And that's one thing I love about XKCD's project MNO Watch, is he does cluster masternodes, and he was kind of one of the big driving forces behind. He made a bunch of personal calls to get that to happen. And so he probably knows how many people that was, but yeah, it was... If the DAO, let's just say the DAO is like 3,500 net masternodes, it's probably like 10% as many individuals, roughly speaking, like a 300-500 people running the show.
Yeah.
That might be an accurate number.
And of those people, there's going to be, I don't know, 5 to 10 whales. So there's going to be some people who have got 100+ masternodes. And it's the same within PIVX. And the problem is, in a situation like that, when you've got really important or really somewhat divisive questions that need to be asked of the masternodes. We shouldn't be acting as if the masternodes are a representative of the community, because they're not. And
yeah, I've been thinking about this actually of a lot. And the thing is, there is no such thing as a community as far as the network's concerned. The network just has coins and usage and also hash rate.
Almost, because the network is still aware that there is velocity. So you could use various metrics to give people a vote weight, like how many coins have you spent from your address? Probably bad for privacy.
That's exactly what I've been working on, figuring out. What did I call it? A delegated proof of aggregate fee or something like that, or accumulated fee. Where basically, if there's someone like me who's not a baller, I'm not rich, but I use it a lot over the years, the total fee spend that I get could give a sort of a multiplier to the vote of some masternode I delegated to.
Sure. Yeah.
And that, in my view, I haven't got done thinking about this, obviously, but in my view, that's one of the only ways to, in a Sybil resistant and accurate kind of a way, economically accurate kind of a way, actually quantify a user outside of coin ownership, because there's coin ownership and then there's usage that you will pay for, I guess. And other than that, there's mining, I guess, but that's about it.
Yeah. But even with mining, you could weight the coins in a certain, you could weight the votes in a certain way that if it's a brand new coin, then you get, I don't know, 0.2 multiplier on top of whatever vote weight you've got. There's different things. The point I'm making is there's never been an effort, not in the Dash, well, not a concerted effort within Dash nor within PIVX, for the DAO to develop to become more independent. And I fear it's because power corrupts and people are happy, like even I'm happy, or I was happy when I was in PIVX, and I knew the four or five people that I needed to speak to get something passed. I was happy, or I know my way around this ecosystem. Now I've come into Dash and I don't know who the four or five guys are to have it passed. So now I can see it with, as you put in the thumbnail, I can see it with an outsider's lens. Now I can say, well, I don't know who I should be speaking to get the proposal passed, but now I don't want to know either. Do you know what I mean? Like I want the DAO to be mature enough that it's not a group of people who are calling the shots, and it's all of the people who are the users, and everybody feels like they've got a voice. Because a lot of the apathy that you'll see within masternode voting is because a person might have two or three nodes. And they know, okay, I might vote one way, but then this other guy is going to vote a different way, and he's got 100 nodes, so I might as well not bother. And I think all of those things really, if we're serious about a decentralized organization running a worldwide electronic cash, that those things need to be addressed. And it seems like they're not being, which is...
Yeah, there's a lot of different incentive things. I mean, obviously, I think that if you don't have voting be mandatory, then obviously that incentivizes people who care. So even if you're a whale, but you don't care, doesn't matter. There's a few improvements that are, again, everyone's just so like, when Evo, is Evo coming out? Everyone's like, that's the only thing you can focus on for the time being. And then after that, I think there's maybe a lot more audience for seeking greater changes. So, for example, I think something where if you only like where you do, you have to get a net 10% to pass a proposal of the entire network. And almost no one votes, as far as like the vast minority votes. Now, if you could do it something like net 10% of active voters, and active voters was if you voted any time in the last 6 months, even if you voted abstain, you know, then you would count in that number as an active voter, something like that, to just like give more power towards the people who are active, but not make it super gameable where you could be like, yeah, all right, I'm going to just like vote five times in a row and just like, you know, however that works out. That would help. The big thing is, which is actually being worked on by, I think, Pasta and some other people, is a way to do easier trustless masternode shares. It's kind of like, you know, PIVX had like staking, that it is very much easier for the average person to stake. I think if the average person can stake and then vote trustlessly at the protocol level in a way, you have a lot more where it's not just like, oh, we have to be a mini whale to vote, which, you know, I mean, 25 grand is not a mini whale anymore, but with, you know, if the price bounces back, it might be. So that can help a lot. And something, the fee spend amplifier thing might help, but I still got to think that through a little bit more.
But I think that's another interesting point that you bring up, because that, as you said, 25 grand is, it's, we might not consider it to be a massive amount of money. I don't know where you are, but I'm based in England, so it's not a crazy amount of money. However, if we're talking about a worldwide currency, what about all of the people in Southeast Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa? How many of these human beings are going to have 25 grand to have a say? Mm-hmm. None of them. And that's the same thing was happening in PIVX, where, all right, they had staking, but they never introduced a one PIV, one vote system.
Yeah.
And it's I don't know. It's and this is where Ethereum have, they've just leapfrogged us, and the IBC chains, they've just leapfrogged us, because they've built it and it's there. It exists already. Like, as soon as you can go to any IBC chain, stake one atom, and you can vote. And do you know what I mean? And it's sad that we've allowed everybody else to overtake us in these aspects. And it seems like a lot of those people weren't even really trying, and they've overtaken us. So I think it really does need to be taken a lot more seriously and considered, if we're serious about having a worldwide currency. It's all well and good if we only let us Europeans call the shots, but then the people who are in places where they don't get a say, what makes us think that they want to be governed by us, though they want the monetary system to be governed by us? You know what I mean? So
yeah, it's, so far we've mostly been talking about values, about like what should a DAO do, who should, you know, all these kind of shoulds, and how can we make it better according to what we think should happen. But then there's another question which I've started to ask myself more recently, is good outcomes or efficiency. And I, like, there's no way of getting around, so Dash has had so much more, for example, Dash, but also all the other DAOs have had so much more protocol level funding for development and other things built in than any other project that's not a big VC powerhouse. Yet all those projects, like let's say Monero's a good example, because it was a long time neck and neck sort of competitor with Dash, but didn't have any kind of a DAO or anything. A lot of these, Bitcoin Cash, the same thing, have performed by almost every metric imaginable, other than, you know, maybe you could say quality of development or something, but that's a very subjective thing, but have outperformed something like Dash and the DAO. So what do you make of that phenomenon where the DAO coins are not cleaning up, or they seem to be almost a step behind?
I feel like the DAOs that we have at the moment, I think they're all still children. So we're comparing children to adults, and the DAOs will lose. I also think that Monero benefited greatly from two things. I think they benefited greatly from Zcash being overvalued when it started, and everybody that put in on the ICO losing a bunch of money. And they benefited greatly from Dash taking their eye off of privacy. That kind of left Monero as the only adult in the room. So there was PIVX, which had a privacy protocol that was untested and fell apart. There was Firo, who had the same privacy protocol that was untested and fell apart. And Monero was the only adult in the room when it came to privacy. And that's the reason why they've done so well. I don't want to say it's not because that they haven't done well technologically, but if we really looked at it feature wise, I think there was a long time when Dash had master modes and Monero didn't even have a graphical user interface. Absolutely. So they weren't setting the world on fire. They'd done things in a novel way, and the belligerence that they had for privacy kept the dollars coming in from donors, because as we've said a few times today, people are willing to pay for it. And I think that's what's really helped those projects, is that they've not been co-opted, they've not been as fragile as young DAOs can be. But
So
like when DAO grows up, it will be stronger.
Well, that's exactly a good point, because like everything is a lesson, everything is learning. And what I learned, what the world should have learned if they're paying attention with the Bitcoin block size debate, is that Bitcoin has no governance, and there's a big weakness with the lack of funding for the protocol development for outsiders to come in and co-opt. That should be what everyone learned. And I learned it, but I thought I was done learning, kind of. You know, I thought just do a DAO and so the problem is, it's just like when you solve one problem, it's like, yay, but wait, there's more. There's another problem to solve now. And you're like, oh, it never ends. This next problem, so clearly, I think it's a good point that from a technological development standpoint, all the unfunded coins, like let's just say, you know, Dash and, you know, or is funded versus Monero is not funded. And the technological development in Monero has been much more like subdued and nuanced. It hasn't been as bold and overreaching and all this kind of stuff. And also Zcash has really, I guess, broken new ground in cryptography and a bunch of other things and done some really amazing things. But
they are the best.
Yes, but market cap wise is not, and usage wise has just not performed nearly as well. And it seems like Monero is going to implement the Halo proving system based membership proofs in a year or two. And so they're kind of like taking away all that money that went into Zcash stuff and kind of using it for their own purpose. So it seems like, I would say, like Monero would be the Bitcoin model, the original model-ish. And Zcash is a more modern model. Obviously, it's not a DAO, but they're trying to move in that direction in some weird ways. But I guess you could say that they each have their room for improvement, but the old model seems to be more financially successful or user-wise successful. And it seems like the same thing with Dash. I mean, Dash has done a bunch of cool things, but has not, and I would say Opivix is the same way, has not managed to get that pop. And so it seems like DAOs or old school DAOs have a pop problem, have a hustle problem, have a take it to market problem. And that's kind of what my presentation was about a little bit, right?
I think we can't really, I struggle to keep PIVX in the conversation with Dash, Monero, Zcash, because there's much, much bigger projects. Mm-hmm. I feel like Monero, I've seen it firsthand, where because they are so focused on that mission, they are so belligerent, they don't care, they're all angry men. They're like, we are having our privacy, this is what we're doing. And they, because of that, they attract some very unique individuals and some very brilliant engineers. And it's Zcash have got something similar, where they, as far as I'm concerned, they are the best when it comes to cryptography. They've got those electric guys, or whatever they call themselves, and they build the stuff that everybody else kind of puts into their own privacy coins. Those two guys, I think, because of their mission and their focus on their mission, they are attracting the best people, and they are using that talent to make very, very good things. Do you know what I mean? And I think that the funding element, I think, will make a big difference, especially once platform has been created. I think that funding element makes it makes Dash a little bit more like Ethereum with an incentive for entrepreneurs to come in and build there, regardless of whether or not they fail or they don't fail. So I think it will be, and I guess that's the promise that everybody's been waiting on with Evolution, is this hybrid of a self-funding network that also has smart contracts. Let's see what we can do with that. And I think that's extremely exciting. And
yeah,
I think we'll take the DAO to another level.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. The thing, what I would have, and I kind of only touched on it on the end of my talk about the thing, is clearly there's some sort of a first of all, I think that one advantage Monero had is by kicking out almost all its inflation in the first couple of years, and it's now hit the tail emission stage. So not only is it more attractive to hold because there's very little inflation compared to Dash, which is a few percent right now, but it's also the feet to the fire of, like, we got to make things happen. We don't have, like, from a treasury perspective, like, the treasury has been around for, what is it, 7 years now, maybe? Around 7 years, 8 years? But, for a big period of time, and it's still kind of, the money's still there, even though it's diminishing over time. I mean, not as soon as Evo launches and it gets doubled, but you know what I'm saying. It gets available coins are sort of diminishing, and there hasn't been like a as I mentioned with the fee revenue part, like a resurgence in that. And the thing is, I think that it kind of reminds me of the idea of like the old school idea of limited government, where the idea of a, I guess, constitutionally limited government in some sort of a way was historically, I think, is old tech by now, personally. You know, not to get too political on this thing, but it's a very, it's very similar to the DAO thing. It's old tech, but I do think that it's undeniable that it was a technical innovation at its time, sort of like the printing press, which caused all of humankind to surge forward in a great way. And I kind of feel like the DAO is the same sort of a thing, where it's not perfect, but I feel like constitutionally limited DAO might be the ticket in the future, where you try to have everything possible in the more voluntary free market sector of the network, of the community, and you only use the DAO decisions and its funding, only the collective, for when you need to. And it just, maybe the DAO minimalism makes sure you keep development funding and can make those hard decisions as a whole, as opposed to just forking off all the time. But it's very inefficient. And if everything is DAO, then you just run out of money because everything's collective and kind of socialized, and it just isn't efficient. So you want to keep it as small as possible, but you need it still. Maybe that's the way forward.
I think one other factor that we haven't really touched on is our own abilities. So I think that if we have a Dash this next bull run, where let's dream for a moment, Dash goes back and it makes all-time highs. So we're talking, I don't know, $1,500 for each Dash. And there's proposals coming in by God knows who for God knows what. I don't think we will be as frivolous with that funding this time around as we were the first time around. I think we are much smarter. Like we joked earlier in Discord about there's a guy in the community called Demo, and he is on everybody. And then there's another guy called Grandmaster Dash. There are a few guys who
is my friend too.
Yeah, there are a few guys who, if you're not on point, they are going to jump on you. They are like hungry wolves. And I feel like they are the DAO's immune system, let's say.
They're part of it, for sure. Well, a little quick caveat on those two individuals in particular. Grandmaster Dash I've had it to deal with commenting on my proposals for like 7 years straight. So I've got a little bit of PTSD. But he, one thing he hates is what we're doing right now, which is long form shows. He would say, "I love everything else you guys are doing, but the fact that you do like hour long podcasts makes me vote against your proposal." And so he's a very particular character. I mean, he has the dash to vote, so let him vote. That's
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. Demo is a very interesting individual. His mind works in ways we cannot comprehend. Let me just leave it at that. But
And we had a guy like that in PVEC called High Tech, who was very similar. And in their own way, these guys are brilliant, but it's just the social aspect of them sometimes lets them down. But the point I really wanted to make is that we're all far more experienced now. We've all been to that dance before. It won't be our first rodeo if we do have a budget that is capable of doing something. If we do have other tough questions, like where we had this one with the reallocation of the blocks, and the incubator guys, they had someone on to argue for the block change, and then they had someone on to argue against the block change. Now, that's never happened before. That didn't happen when we had the discussion about privacy. That and those sorts of things are being done so that we can come to a more efficient outcome. I think there's now.
Also, as a caveat, I don't know if you noticed, but they couldn't find anyone to do the counter block or proposal thing. So I volunteered to, even though I supported the reallocation, I volunteered to trash it, to steel man the opposition case. And I was actually on schedule until Took Normal came from the ashes and came to, and I was like, "Good, you have a real guy. I'm gonna back
And
away."
I thought he was great. And well, talk about long form. I think he could have probably been on for 3 hours. So they ended up cutting him short. I would have listened to him for another 2 hours. It was I thought it was good to have somebody present the other side of the argument. And I think that it's learning, and I don't think as people we are used to working as we are in this DAO. There's so much going on, there's so much for us to learn. And not only that, but we're adults. We're all stuck in our ways. So we're all used to working in a certain way where we've got a boss or we've got a wife. We've got someone who tells us what to do. We've got someone who we tell them what to do. We don't have to try to find common ground with strangers who have very strange ways of speaking to us. We don't have to do that in our daily lives usually. So all of these things we're learning and we are getting better at. So I think you'll find that the DAOs that mature, and I don't think it will happen, maybe not this cycle, it might be the cycle after, the DAOs that mature, I think that they will go on to become more powerful than decentralized companies, in the same way that open source software is more powerful than closed source software. I think it will be a very similar thing, but just a phenomenon that takes the human social order a lot longer to come to grips with or come to terms with.
Hillary had a super chat. It's probably a little old by now, but he said I'm sure he's talking about the reallocation proposal. He says XK turned it in, the network into a cluster from a network cluster to a cluster watch. Let's not forget that MNO watch could spur the possibility for MNOs over Tor, which he's presenting would hide IPs. Anyway, that was a few different thoughts in there, but
I think that's important as well. I think that being able to vote privately is quite important.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I'm kind of conflicted because I can't tell if I like the privacy or the transparency of blockchain better, because I'm in it for the personal financial privacy, obviously. But at the same time, I love looking at like block explorers and movements of coins and just seeing like, oh, look, we can tell, like, I just love the data and just being able to have this overview of it. And it's, I'd love there for there to be a way to, compare both, have both, have your cake and eat it too. And like every time we're like, oh, look, a new whale voted on this proposal. And it's like, I kind of like that personally, but that doesn't mean it's a value that we should have. But talk about the DAO and friendly and stuff. You know, the channel in the Discord, the Thunderdome, that's kind of what I call the entire DAO. And in my years, it's very interesting. In fact, my last proposal, which was on the integrations bounty, which just expired, like the last proposal, the last one went through and it got paid out. People were getting mad because I didn't comment on the proposal at all. I just decided, like, fuck it. If you want to defund me, I don't care anymore. I'm just not gonna do it. People were getting mad in the comments. I saw, like, why isn't he talking to us? I'm like,
yeah, that's bad voting form.
Yeah, it is. It is. But I just didn't. If I resurrect the bounty, if it runs out, I need more, I'm going to talk to him more. But the point is, it's a little bit of a brutal spot. And a lot of adult interests, I should say, like serious companies and, you know, things like that, like, just stay away from it. Or they talk to me about it and I tell them, like, look, this is what you're in for. And they choose not to go through the DAO. Do you think Dash has a toxicity problem? Do you think PIVX or other comparable DAOs have it better or worse? Do you think it is a problem? Do you think it's, yeah, what do you think? Open-ended, I guess.
Yeah, what do I think? We have to define what constitutes a problem. There definitely is toxicity within Dash, and there is toxicity within PIVX. There is slightly less toxicity within PIVX than there is within Dash, and that's mostly because the people that were in Dash, that were in PIVX at the start, were a little bit more touchy-feely, a little bit more spiritual, a little bit more hippie. So we actually went out of our way to try to make it as welcoming as possible. As a result, there are some metrics that, like, I tend to notice when I'm in different communities, like how many women are vocal within this community, how many women can be seen. And within Dash, there's not many. Within
PIVX, I will kind of interject by maybe saying there's a generational reason for that, kind of like with the generation of legislators who don't understand crypto, it's because they're older. The Dash community dates back to 2014, and a lot of early crypto people were just weirdos, let's be honest. Like, yeah, just kind of strange, antisocial people, maybe on the spectrum, who knows. And then because PIVX is younger, maybe there's a lower percentage of those people just because of the age thing. But that's just something that I thought.
Possibly, but if that's the case, from my memory, when we were first getting into crypto, there were more women. It was a more diverse place, possibly, than it is now. If we look at, like, the new projects, it seems to be solely North American men, purely now. VC money and all these types of things. There is it seems to be becoming more like Wall Street than it was like, I don't know, a squat when we first turned up. So I agree that there are generational differences, but I'm not sure in which direction we're heading. But back to the toxicity, I don't know if I would call it a problem. I think it's just us learning how to interact with each other. Plenty of different people from varying cultures with varying grasps of English, which often makes a difference. Some people, yeah, like in England, we tend to say please, we will queue up for, and that's just the way we are. But then there's other cultures where they just don't say please, they might just say give me, or like Demo said, you need to sort out that blah blah blah, and it can be brash and it can seem harsh, and to some people it can seem toxic. So I don't know if I would say it's a problem. I think it's a feature, and I think it's something that we're learning and we will soon get over. So it's not something that I particularly worry about, but it's definitely something that exists. And there are I would say there are levels to it. Like, I remember once I went into the Decred Discord, and it was horrible. Like, they were all of them, like, to a matter. There was one guy who DM'd me, and he was like, don't worry about those guys, they can be quite harsh, but they were all horrible to me. Like, they didn't know.
You're talking about this with the Dash context, like, compared to Dash, they were horrible. That must be something.
Yeah,
that
must be something exactly. Special. No, they were real horrible. They were like, I remember after I put the phone down and I kind of looked at it and I was like, oh god, that was a really horrible experience. I think I'll just go back to PIVX and stay there. And it was, I think other projects will have it worse than Dash, and other projects will have it better. But I definitely think it is something. It's just something that we have to learn to mitigate as best as we can, really. But it exists. It's a feature. It's not really a massive problem.
Yeah, it seems if I were to break down the fact that you can troll people of the highest power is a feature, I think. The fact that there's a lot of toxicity might be more of a bug, but it's more circumstantial, I guess. If I were to kind of break down, there's two problems, right? Or two issues. One issue is just a lot of early people who happen to be like strange nerd people, almost, I wouldn't say by chance, but like almost by chance, stumbled upon Bitcoin and then stumbled upon Dash and got just a massive amount of tokens for, even at today's prices, pennies on the dollar. So you have people who could never amass that amount of power and influence in the regular world who have inordinate voice. There's a little bit of that, and it's always going to be a thing. Whereas today, in order to get real money to be able to put into crypto, it doesn't mean you're not as much of a sociopath, but you know, you're better at being a corporate sociopath. You're more social in the way you do that.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of that, but also the Dash Central, especially just unfettered Thunderdome of comments, is not accurate, right? It's not the way things could or should be. And there's been a lot of talk, never any action, meaningfully at least, of finding ways of mitigating that. One thing I would like, for example, especially with all this, like, let's be honest, like, mental illness out there on these comment threads, like, some of it is just mean and toxic, but some of it is like people with problems. There is a gentleman, which I think you will find, who is not fond of me. In fact, although I met him in person, I thought we were friends, and one day over one small thing, he decided he hated me to the ends of the earth. You'll find him in the comments somewhere. Clearly something wrong, I guess. But the point is, I think that if you, for example, have an anti-spam commenting fee, which doesn't mean it's not like you have to pay a lot to comment, but per comment, you know, maybe pay a, you know, 0.1-0.01 dash, something like that. And of course, it doesn't have to be protocol level. That could be like in the major UIs. You can just do that. And then you tip people, whoever, you know, and tipping kind of elevates some comments, maybe have some sort of a little way for people to just, so the stuff that people don't value, just like first of all, so that if they spam the crap, like just spam all this like weird stuff, including like, Demo could still speak because XKCD likes him and would probably subsidize him. But other than that, you know, it would kind of focus the comments a little bit more. And also the valued comments that people were willing to pay money for, like, I value him, I'm going to actually tip him with real money that I'm not getting back to elevate his comments. And it just kind of keeps that towards the top. And then all the comments are still there, right? It's not, they're not, the ones you hate aren't hidden. They're just not as far up the list. And so you focus up at the top where people pay money. And then also people who just spam, comment, at least they should be paying a fee, which I think should go to the UI, whoever maintains the site, because right now it's a volunteer project, Dash Central is. Just something like that, I think it wouldn't change the composition of the community, but would vastly change the experience of interacting with the DAO itself.
Right. So I I like the idea. I think I probably wouldn't use it. I think it would be something that you should. It would be optional, right? So if you wanted to have things ordered by the amount that people tipped the comments, that would be good. I feel like for me personally, what I like to do is when there are people that are like that, is I like to try to squeeze the value out of their words. So, and like the prime example is the guy who's saying to do the vote by the numbers, vote by the numbers. And I'll put up post about, I'm going to do tutorials for the DAO. And he says, do one about vote by the numbers. Don't say my name because do what I say. And I read the thing and I was annoyed. I was angry. If he'd have been in the room, I would have shouted and I would have said, you're an idiot. But I squeezed the value out of it. And I was like, well, what he's saying, it actually does have value. It's just, unfortunately, he's saying it and he's annoyed me. And then what happens is you tend to personalize ideas. And now I think if that vote the numbers thing, if you'd have brought that forward, or if Ryan had brought it forward, or Amanda had brought it forward, or Quantum Explorer brought it forward, somebody with a little bit more maybe guile had brought it forward, I think people would be seriously talking about the idea because it makes sense. The fact you can only vote yes, no, or abstain is a horrible limitation. And we've seen it at work, even in the reallocation. The problem is we're not putting enough effort into trying to find the common ground in our cognitive diversity. And that's really what you're going through with these guys that are, and I've seen them jump on you in, and I thought, like, I disagree with a lot of the things. You'll tweet something and I'll be like, oh, this Joel guy, what's he talking about? Let me go and reply. But we've never gotten to the point where I'm just like, oh, I hate you, and or you've been like, oh, I hate you. Some of these guys, they deliver value in a very poor way. And what will happen is you might sometimes you'll take the attacks and then you kind of will leave the value. And I've seen them jump on you in your proposals. And some of the things that they've said has got merit. Unfortunately, because they seem to be just personally attacking you, the merit of the things that they're saying is getting lost. I feel like that's like the key to having a good DAO, is to try to squeeze the value out of what seems to be nonsensical comments. And simply downvoting them or trying to sweep them under the carpet, I think we run the risk of losing a lot of value by, you know, like writing these people off because they have what I would class to be a poor way of communicating. Like I discussed with somebody before, and they were saying that if they're discussing with somebody and the person starts to swear or use curse words, bad language, then they're not going to speak to them anymore. And I said, well, you're gonna miss out on a lot of things, because a lot of people might say very intelligent things but curse at the beginning of it.
Yeah. And well, that's kind of the XKCD situation, because I think he's the one person who's managed to cross over the troll barrier. He's like the daywalker of the trolls, because he can be quite, I would say, I don't know if toxic's the right word, but quite blunt in an aggressive and potentially hurtful way. But it's, I think the value that of what he's contributed has shown through enough that people are willing to kind of give him a pass at his like brusqueness. And on the other hand side, I do think that like the free market solves a lot of things. And what I like about the idea of a monetary based comment system type thing is a lot of people have maybe a correct opinion, a correct feedback, but then it feels good for them to express it in a language that feels good to them. And so they say, well, I'm right. I said it in a way that I feel good, and it's there on the page, done. And they have no financial incentive or really other incentive to make sure that the message is heard. But so, like, if instead of a bunch of like unhinged rants and swears and personal attacks, if the person say like, oh, the more I post, the more it costs me, and if no one likes me back, my posts are at the bottom anyway. They might take those thoughts and just package them in a better way that sells better. Be like, is this going to sell better? And I put it up here, and then those views might get heard better.
They may also just leave.
It's true.
I know you might not lose sleep over that, but
depends on which one.
So what I think is often you may sometimes need, and this is where I think Dash have done a decent enough job, and PivX also, is you may need different forums for different people. So in PivX, there's now two Discords. There's one Discord, which some people call the censored Discord, and then there's the other Discord where pretty much anything goes. So people will be in there and they'll be effing and blinding and saying, oh, well, I don't like this and I don't like that, blah, blah, blah. And nothing gets censored in that Discord. I think people need to have places where they can discuss in language that is comfortable for them. I think if we have it in a way that everybody has to discuss in language that is comfortable for the people with money, again, we're starting to trend towards being ruled by the Europeans, the guys with money, people like me who speak like me and speak like you. So it's fine for us, but then we're in our own subtle way, we're showing how much we don't value people who don't want to join us and conversate with our ideals. So I feel like, and that's probably the main gripe I've got with having a fee-based comment section. However,
well, let me clarify on that thing first. First off, an anti-spam fee just to prevent people from just like, 8 mil, like flooding it, like that's not like a fee, I have $10, oh, I blew it all on a comments day, but like I have like $1 and I blew it all with like 50 comments, like just an anti-spam fee. But then the other thing is the opportunity for when you post something for people to send you money to boost your comment, and so even if you don't have money, you do get tips, you do get kind of elevation. And also, it's not an idea I'm super sold on. It's just an idea that I thought, oh, this might change things up.
Well, it does exist and it does work. So there was two. There was, you probably remember Steemit. There was Steemit, which was pretty good for that. So you could make a comment and people could upvote it and you would collect these Steemit tokens and you could like stake them or you could sell them or whatever. But in the Cosmos ecosystem, there's a forums called the Commonwealth. Now, when you sign into the forums, you can sign in with your wallet. And then on some forums, there's a small fee to make comments, or you can give a small tip to people who have already made comments. Mm-hmm. So it does exist. And to be fair, it is pretty successful at limiting people going on to just troll. Mm-hmm. The counter argument is that even with some of these spam filters, like we saw with the demo put up a proposal that lasts 25 months for the voter numbers. Yeah. And
I've dealt with this guy for so many years. And like, I have zero ill will for this man, or I assume it's a man, but there's a lot of like headaches that have come from this person, but not problematic headache, just like, oh god, there goes demo again, you know.
The good thing is at least he's, because I was discussing it with XKCD today, and at least it's highlighted the fact that the spam filter that is currently within Dash is not high enough. It's not a deterrent. I'm quite sure if we dared him, he would do it again, and he would do five more of them, because five Dash, he can probably afford it. So it's we've learned something from from that situation. But yeah,
Yeah.
the
Although on a very slight tangent on that, I do think that the dash fee reduction to one dash, it should have been turned to a one dash per month. So if you do a one-off governance
Yes.
question, it's one. If you do like a 24 month, it's 24 dash. That would have made more
Yeah.
sense.
Yeah. But that's something that we need to, I guess, ask the core group to change after they've released Evolution.
Yeah, and so one thing I think is fascinating, the two Discord, Tale of Two Discords. The same thing happened with Dash. I don't know if you were paying attention during the time. Probably not. But when Slack started, free Slack started limiting channels and they were going to charge a ton of money for other things, everyone migrated to Discord. And first off, the Dash Slack was run by the people who defected to PIVX, right? The who then Smart Cash, the more boisterous, let's just call them boisterous, the boisterous folks. And when they had a disagreement over the core with the core team, which in retrospect was a very valid one, it was the business development guy kind of going AWOL and like not delivering what he said he would, right? Which is very clear. And then when they left, they torpedoed the Discord. They literally like suicide bombed it. Boom. And so, I mean, sorry, the Slack channel. And so then, Tao of Satoshi, as he goes by, had a different Slack channel called the Dash Nation. And so everyone just migrated to there like a sinking ship, like a life raft. And then eventually, when Slack became a problem, there became a Dash Nation Discord. And then things got weird because, first of all, Tao of Satoshi ran the Discord and had a bunch of moderators and stuff. He had a no swearing rule, a very he's a Canadian fellow, so you get the kind of vibe, right?
We've got one.
No swearing rule and a bunch of other things. And the one that became a very big problem, again, and I'm an interested party in this, like I was on the other side of the equation, so if you consider that I might be biased, all right, just the disclaimer there. But they had a rule that said no speculation passed off as fact. And that rule was ended up being the rule that became the censorship rule, that anytime you said like, oh,
Oh, he's
this guy,
lying. Delete it.
yeah, that's speculation, and this is speculation passed off as fact, it will not be tolerated in Dash Nation, zap. And like, so it ended up being there was a proposal in particular that was very controversial and by the end called Kuva Cash, and the person involved with that was a, I guess, a master manipulator and toxic kind of person who saw who whenever he saw the treasury size decreasing on purpose targeted other proposals and started a whole bunch of drama around them to try to get them defunded so he had more room for his proposal and did a bunch of other things. And there's a that's a the Kuva story is way too long, but the point is the moderators of Dash Nation started to censor in his favor, and you get people who were on that side are going to be freaking out saying, no, that's not what happened. Okay, my perspective, sorry. And I was one of these moderators, by the way, and I got kicked off the team for this. And eventually, what happened is a few of us, basically all the old moderator team, left and started a new Discord called the Dash, just the Dash Discord. It was called the Dash Talk Discord, but then got renamed to just the Dash Discord, which is what we have today. And so the two competing Discords, like the fork and then the old one, the fork obviously has, as I'm sure you're aware, has some very basic rules of like don't FUD, right? To keep
I don't think I'm in that one. I
no,
think I
that is
might
the
have
one
just
you're in.
removed
That is the one you're in, I think. Though there is only one right now. Let me see if
myself.
you're
Right, okay.
actually in there. Let me
Because
tag you.
I'm quite sure the one I'm in,
Yes, you're in this one.
we're allowed to.
And so, but basically, very relaxed moderation, but still some, like, basically, you can't be a piece of shit to other people. You can't be super toxic. And also, you can't FUD. You can't spread, like, lies and FUD, which is a watered down version of the speculation is fact rule. Basically, the speculation is fact was just way too broad. But this is basically, if you FUD, that's not good. If you're just here to FUD, you got to be constructive. Or if you're like, say, if you have valid direct criticisms, like Dash is probably going to go to zero if it continues on this path of X. It's like, fine, you can say that. But if you're like, or I think this, but you're saying there's some like nuance to that. But the point is, the two different discords were like competing for a while, and there was like some animosity, I guess, between them. And over time, with the free market, the one won out and the other one just shut down. And before it shut down, the moderators of both talked, like the former foes, you know, gave a little handshake and just said like, look, let's combine. Let's offer you guys to be mods here as well, the surviving ones. And we'll just call bygones bygones. So that's the story. There's a story of like that whole drama, which is
happy ending.
Yeah, it's an oddly happy ending. Also, where a minority fork ends up being the one that just wins out entirely. Like every B casher out there furiously, you know, at the thought of this, right? Sure. That's what they'd like to happen. But it's one of those situations. It's just interesting to see how also, as far as the uncensored thing, after this podcast, we usually hold something called the after party, which is just a Jitsi hangout with as many people as one, as late as we want, anything like that. It's not broadcast. And the after party ended up being where a lot of like the behind the scenes, what's really going on at Dash kind of started happening. And it's a lot of like, it's kind of like the, you know, it's like a revolution was planned, like all like the seeds of, Ryan Taylor getting kicked out and, you know, sorry, preemptively deciding to resign one time. That all happened. A lot of the roots came from there. Quantum Explorer kept coming in and talking about like, oh, we just finished this. I was up all night coding that. And like, it just ended up being, and then a lot of people going unhinged and swearing at each other and stuff also there, like just an uncensored private forum for all that stuff. So the way the community channels have kind of moved around has been very interesting.
We had a similar thing where when we started, we was, because it was all about privacy, a lot of it became about censorship as well. So we got on this kind of train whereby we were saying basically you could say or do whatever you wanted, and if people came in and trolled or they were like, oh, Pivx is going to zero or whatever, we'd be like, well, fine, we just have to either engage them or ignore them, but we wouldn't delete what they would say. And then what ended up happening was people would just do more and more outlandish things until one guy came in and started posting pictures of animal porn, and he was like, well, you can't censor me because it's my freedom. And then we was like, okay, we're gonna have to have some sort of rules here. So then we
drew
up a little code of
need to keep on giving demo references.
I don't think so. I actually quite like demo as well. I do like the I do like the Mavericks who are who challenge me to do better. I do actually like those guys. But no, it wasn't. It was just a random guy. And it was, you get all sorts in crypto, especially back then. You got all sorts. We just put up a code of conduct, and what we said basically was we will treat the Discord like it's a family dinner table. So however you would act at a dinner table in front of your in-laws, your parents, and like your elders and your children, that's how you should act in the Discord. So you might swear, but only if you really felt the need to, which will be very, very rarely. You generally would. It made sense because at the time, one of the marketing guys in Pivx was like 15 years old. So it was wrong.
Is it doxing to ask who it was? I'm just seeing if it's the one I know.
What, the person who was
the young person?
I'm not gonna say. I'm not gonna say. But
maybe off imagine. Air we can mention, because I'm wondering if it's the same one I'm thinking of who used to be. Did he used to be in Dash at all?
Yes.
Yeah, that I know who it is. Never same or more.
Yeah, same person. So yeah, and just because there's that element as well, and who knows how young the people are that are coming into Discord. So I think from time to time we have to act with a little bit of responsibility, like
absolutely. Like well, I'm an ultimate free market maximalist, and it's not a purely capitalistic thing to say. It's also just try it and see what happens, and keep throwing things at it until the system adapts to deal with whatever has happened. And that's the thing with the DAO. Like, we've witnessed the waves of, like, the censorship battles, the arguments, the getting kicked out of this, the all that kind of stuff. And then the system just sort of, like, it reorients itself, and eventually, I don't know, I think in the long term, you get probably good outcomes, I guess, but not unless you.
I think
you have to be intentional.
We're halfway through. I feel like we're halfway through the journey. I feel like the DAOs that we've got, they're getting to be, they're almost teenagers. So we're almost halfway. We've got a long way to go, and I feel like now we're starting to identify what needs to be changed. And I can't see that we're going to allow people to not change those things, not make those improvements. The Dash DAO is, what, 7-8 years old, and it hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. It hasn't changed at all. I think
the proposal fee went down. The proposal fee went down. That's it.
Exactly. Right. That's it. Proposal fee's gone down, and the actual budget has been doubled. That's all that's been changed in 6 or 7 years. I think we can do better.
And one thing that's on the menu for, again, get Evo out the door and then figure out the rest, is to do better explicit voting mechanisms, where you don't put in a request for funding proposal to make a governance decision, where you can actually do like a multiple choice governance proposal. And so that's on the agenda at some point. That would be really great to have, where,
the problem is, like I said before, the problem is these things already exist. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. The problem is that you go and you have a look at, I don't know, Nouns DAO on Ethereum, they've already got that functionality. Well, all the Ethereum DAOs have already got that functionality, where they can put in a vote, and you could have 10 options. So it's sooner rather than later, I guess. Sooner rather than later, because we are falling behind, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. The hope is that where my primary concern is through efficiency and growth at this point. And the decision stuff, sometimes I feel like the Dash DAO spent too much time navel gazing, too much time on internal politics, and not enough time getting new users and getting out there. And other projects might have done a lot better. But on the other hand, Bitcoin Cash is finally in a growth stage, because it was a result of a bloody split, and itself had two subsequent bloody splits, which kill so much productivity and so much other things. And so they seem to be convinced that they finally got it right, and that it's going to be smooth sailing from here. I can imagine a few years there might be another split, but for their sake, I really hope I'm wrong. We'll see. In which case, it's like the tortoise and the hare. Amari Sachet always said, he says he really likes Dash's model, but he says the DAO is slow and bureaucratic. And so if that's our problem, is we're slow and bureaucratic, then, I mean, it is what it is, but maybe slow and steady does win the race.
Yeah. And maybe we won't be slow forever. You know, like 9-year-olds are slow, but by the time they get to 19, they're not slow anymore. So we're learning how to pick up speed. We know how to navigate particularly tough proposals. We've just gotten through another one with the reallocation, and it could have caused a split, but it didn't. And a split wasn't even really on the cards. So
not yet. We'll see. We'll see. There's always that stuff. Well, this has been quite the fascinating conversation. Where can you divert people's attention to follow you and your work? You already gave me the Twitter and your site, so I'll put those on the screen. Anything else you want to mention,
let me know. Twitter, the site. I've got a book. It's on Amazon. It's called The Ultimate DAO Handbook. Ooh, nice.
I'm going to go look at that in a second.
Yeah, that was good fun. I might do another version, like an update next year, because loads has changed. And yeah, no, that's it really, DAO-wise. I like to try my hand at developing things. So I've developed a little NFT marketplace called Bidify. And I was thinking about developing a Kickstarter style site, which will be for Dash. I'll probably have to make it be for PIVX as well, otherwise I'll get in trouble. Mm-hmm. So see if I can do something like that. That might be my next project. But yeah, basically, if you want to follow me, then Twitter is the place that I'm most active, or X, as it's called now.
X. All right. Yeah. Well, thanks very much for being on. Thanks, everyone, for watching, especially those who wanted to watch the continuing Dash retreat kind of stuff. Come back and watch it otherwise. now, we will have... I'll see if anyone's interested in doing the after party tonight. But usually after the Dash podcast, we have something called the after party, which is just like this, except it's not broadcast, it's not scripted, and as many people as want can join. And that's where a lot of fun stuff happens. If you do want in on the after party, let me know. You can reach me on Discord at The Desert Links, on Twitter at The Desert Links, on Telegram at The Desert Links. Anywhere you know how to reach out, just do that. Or you go to the Dash Discord and just start asking around, hey, where the after party at? And it'll get in. I have a feeling a lot of our regulars are away in at the retreat, but we'll see. So thanks very much for being on. I'll see you guys next week. There's an interesting episode of the Zcash podcast next week, so that'll be fun. All right. Bye-bye, guys.